What's going on? You're listening to the Long Island Sound Podcast, your source for everything Isles, and the only Islanders podcast with more accidental blade injuries than the entire cast of Sweeney Todd. I'm one of your hosts, Damon Vetteri, and I'm joined this week by Ben Cohen. Ben, what's up?
That was a really good intro. I'm a fan.
Oh, good. I'm glad.
For those of you who don't know this, which I'm sure is most people, me and Kenny don't know the intros before they happen. So this is my live on air reaction, and 10 out of 10.
Thank you. I wasn't sure if I was going to go with Edward Scissorhands, Freddy Krueger, but I've been watching, as most 30-somethings do, a lot of The Office on Netflix. It's always on in the background, and just the episode of Andy and the demon barber, Fleet Street, and the play and all. I saw, just Sweeney Todd. Anyway. Nice. So, this is going to be a weird one because I don't know how I'm feeling about the team. And I think from what I gauge on Twitter, most Islander fans are kind of in the same boat. It's been a weird kind of up and down week or so. You think the team's getting back on track. They put some impressive wins together and then they kind of lay an egg. And that's been, I think, the pattern since the All-Star break has been, kind of beat some good teams and then you just kind of have an off night. As long as they're winning 2 of 3 for the remaining 30 some odd games or whatever's left, I'm good with that. But it is a little strange to see a team that was so just almost boringly consistent last year be very hot and cold this year.
Yeah, and I saw a statistic, or not a statistic, but I was listening to another Islanders podcast. Shout out to my favorite Islanders podcast, which is the Athletic Islanders podcast, No Sleep Till Belmont. I don't think that should take viewers away from us because everyone should listen to Arthur Staple. I'm a fan.
And Mark Parrish. You got to love Mark.
And Mark Parrish, exactly. I'm a fan. And one of the things they were talking about is if you were to gauge right now, don't look at any standings, don't look at games played, just gauge how well do you think the Islanders would need to play between now and the end of the season for them to hit 100 points?
I would say they would need to probably, if they've got I'm not looking at anything. This is all off the top of my head. I want to say they're at 71, 72 points, something like that. So they would only, they would need to win or at least get points in 15, maybe half their games.
Yeah. So they're, assuming there are no overtime losses, the Islanders need to be one better than 500 to hit 100 points. So that's what we've been criticizing them for playing until a couple games ago. I'd say until the Vancouver game, we'll say until the break. That's what we criticized them for playing 500 hockey. If they played 500 hockey between now and then, they'd be a 100-point team.
Yeah, but let me ask you a really insane question, and I'm being hyperbolic here, but I'm almost not. Does 100 points even guarantee you're getting into the playoffs this year?
I know,
in the East?
Exactly. It's crazy.
I mean, this is biblical level insanity right now with what's going on within this conference.
Sure.
Does anyone lose?
No one does. Although, funny enough, today both the Flyers and the Panthers lost. The Panthers I care less about, but
I think the Panthers are going to drop off. I think they're team. Philly's such a strange team. They go hot and cold. Now the Rangers are heating up. I still don't know how the Blue Jackets are where they are. We'll recap the standings, but I want to get into the games first.
Yeah.
So funny enough, we were one game behind the Kiefer Bellows heroism. Because last episode, we named it Bellows gets the call. We were saying how we thought he looked pretty good in his first game. I was saying how I was disappointed that he was going to be on the third line because I don't think that's putting him in a position to succeed. And the kid goes out and gets the first star of the game against LA, scores two much-needed goals, and the Isles beat the Kings 5-3. I mean, his second goal, reminded me so much of Hosang when Hosang scored against the Coyotes from that crazy angle. And you're just like, wow, see what happens when you shoot the puck?
Yeah.
And just like Quick's reaction was just like he like shrugged his shoulders. He's like, really? Really? That went in? Like, you know, the kids, he's still so green that he's like, oh, I got to get the puck, shoot it, you know? But he is what we need. And we've touched on it with Wahlstrom. And now we're going to talk about it with Bellows. He's what this team needs, not necessarily for his skill set, but for what he leans towards. He is a shoot first kind of player. And we know the Islanders are anything but that. All of their studs, all of their, you know, the guys that they're paying the big bucks or will be paying the big bucks next year with Barzal, they're all playmakers. None of them are finishers. None of them are shoot first mentality players. And it's nice to see when you've got a kid in Kiefer Bellows who comes in and is just shooting the puck and it's going in. I mean, that's the reason why they won that game, was because he was taking shots.
For sure. And we talked about it a lot when Wahlstrom came up, because it was the same deal with Wahlstrom. Of course, they're different players, but you talked about the shoot first mentality. And one of the issues was, who is going to get him the puck? Who are we going to put in a position for them to succeed? And we talked about, you tweeted and were, you know, I don't know what your take on it is now, but the idea of throwing Bellows with Brassard and Dalcol is like the Isle of Misfit Toys. Not to shit on someone's at on Twitter, is that, but like to use it literally. But it's kind of working on. Well, it's kind of working out. And I'm curious. I haven't really given thought to it, but I'm curious about what the difference between what's working with Bellows and what isn't with Wahlstrom, because I'm thinking about did Wahlstrom probably played with Brassard and Dalcol, did he not?
I think Brassard was still centering the third line at that time, but actually no, because Boudreau was up too, so Wahlstrom was playing with Boudreau, I think, a little bit. I have to go back and look. I don't remember. I'll say this to answer your question. I don't know if it's necessarily working in the sense that you could call it a success, because while I think Bellows has looked good, I think Brassard has looked better, but still not what we need from him. But I just think this is what he is. And Dalcol, I think, has looked a lot better in the last, say, 10 games. I think this is the best hockey he's ever played.
For sure.
Again, not saying a whole lot, but yeah, on the cheap, and if he's going to put goals in and be involved, I'm okay with that. I think it's too small of a sample size to tell. Bellows scored in one game. He had two nice goals. He was the star of the game, but he's played in, what, 4 games now? And he scored in one of them. So it's not like he's lighting the world on fire. But
I agree completely.
You Sorry, agree completely or you disagree completely?
I agree completely.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So it's not like you can say, wow, we need to analyze the difference between Oliver Wahlstrom and Kiefer Bellows and why it's working. I think, you know, Bellows, number one, is a little bit more mature. He's a little bit older. He's been in this Isle system a little bit longer. You know that Trotz talked about how Wahlstrom has a lot of raw. I think the ceiling for Wahlstrom is way higher than Bellows, but I think Bellows knows what it takes to be a professional from his dad. He's been in the Isle system longer. And Wahlstrom, I mean, the knock from Trotz was like, it's like the kid's never been professionally coached in his life. So I think that's part of it. But it's also, hey, let's see what happens. You know, I'd like to see Bellows get some power play time. The Isle's power play, and again, we'll kind of get into the games, but the Isle's power play is back to kind of what it was last year. It's just really almost a non-factor. And I think, again, it goes back to what I said at the top of the show, which is that you have so many playmakers and you don't have anybody willing to shoot the damn thing. And you need to start injecting shoot first guys on your power play. It needs to be not the 5 best players you have. It needs to be the 5 that work best together. And that's something that no matter who's coaching this group, they just can't seem to figure it out. And I just think it's because they don't have enough of one particular type. They've got, you know, 5 flavors of vanilla soft serve, and they need a little bit of chocolate and something a little funky, you know? They don't have that.
Yeah. And there's, I think there's also proof to sort of back up your ideas where, you know, there's that argument where the Islanders don't have enough talent to have a good power play. Well, that's bullshit. If you think about some of the best power plays in the game, they're not necessarily what you'd expect. Washington has a comparable power play to the Islanders. And you'd ask why? I think a lot of it is because every power play, they shove the puck down Ovechkin's throat. Now, he is the best, the greatest power play scorer that we've ever seen. But that's not your only option. Like, there are 5 guys on the ice. And that's part of the reason, in my opinion, why their percentage is at 19-20%, which is, like, right where the Islanders are. And maybe if they changed up their power play, like, who was on the first unit, you know, who's on the other side, if Backstrom shot more, Dal Colt shooting more, and it's like, since the Vancouver game, two shots, one shot, two shots, one shot, three shots, and, like, that's not great, but it's certainly improving on zeros, and yeah. And Bellows is going to give you the same thing, which is something that I would love, especially, like, on the second unit instead of a Brassard or that kind of thing, because you don't – Brassard's not going to give you a lot. I think we sort of established that.
Yeah. He's here for this year, and I doubt he's back after that. Yeah. They got to look for another option. But, you know, I think it goes back to well, let's talk about you. So you compared, like, Washington. I think Washington's problems are different than the Islanders. I think Washington's problem is that they're so used to one thing.
Yeah.
When you've got a crutch like Ovechkin, where just give him the puck and let him shoot, and if he scores, great. Like, it's so hard to break away from that. Like, how do you not feed this guy all the time, you know? Where the Islanders, like, I wish we had somebody who shot half the time like Ovechkin does, because you're not scoring if you're not getting shots. And it's just, this is something that we've just talked about and talked about and talked about. It's just such a deliberate power play. Anytime Nick Leddy's out there, you know he's not a threat to shoot. So it's like, what are you, you know, nothing's going to change unless you switch up the personnel. And again, it's okay to not have your 5 best out there. Get the 5 that work best together. And if that means you need to bring up more guys who are going to shoot the puck first, then do it. I don't care who it is. It doesn't have to be Wahlstrom. Anybody who says they're going to shoot the puck, like, okay, come on in. Let's do this, because it can't be much worse. So I was so thrilled for Bellows, like, for that kid to hear his name being chanted, you know, in his second pro game, like, just awesome stuff. Awesome stuff. That was a real feel good game for this team.
Yeah. I'd say 2 more quick things, and then we should move on. One is back on the Bellows sort of thing, is if you, and Bellows are the third line, if you will. If you backtrack, I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, I think Kenny was talking about how the time was up for the third line and something needed to change. And even if bringing up Kiefer Bellows was not, like, the hugest thing, it was, you know, it was the change that's probably the easiest to make. What I would say is I'm not saying Kiefer Bellows is, you know, the Lord and Savior, and now Michael Dal Colle has become Nicklas Backstrom. What I'm saying more is that, or even that the third line is now not an issue. I think what I'm saying more is that they've now earned patience for a little while to see what happens, to that period, to even if it's the 10 games, and just to see if this continues to be a hot streak, if it goes back to being an issue, and then you readdress. But they've earned a couple games to sort of figure it out. And if they go, you know, 2-3 games without a point, shit happens. And if they don't come back, then that's the issue. But I think they've earned those few games.
Oh, I agree. I mean, that Kings game, Dal Colle scored, Bellows had 2. That's 3 goals for your third line.
Yeah.
That's 3 goals. That's 3 goals in kids making, what, like, $1.5 million combined, and you get 3 goals out of them? Like, yeah. I know it's stupid to break it down by numbers like that, but that's what the league has become. And it's just, it's pretty funny to see that. I mean, Matt Martin got on the board that one. I mean, they had 4 of their 5 goals were from the bottom 6, and then Lee had that empty netter where he almost knocked himself out on the post at the end of the game. But that's what you want to see. I mean, that was like a arguably a bad hockey team that got beat by our bottom line players, and that's okay. You can do that sometimes.
I think that's actually a really good segue to our to the other thing that I wanted to talk about, which was that I really want to see Matt Barzal shoot more. He really is pissing me off. I love him to death, but when you're talking about that Kings game, and we've talked for ages about how we need the bottom six to step up, and they did, but now I kind of want more of the top six now, and maybe that's just greedy in a game where you score five goals, and the only one that a top six guy got was an empty netter, but I want, like, Barzal has, when was the last time Barzal scored? He scored.
Does it count if he was 8 feet offside? Because if it doesn't, then it was the next game against the Lightning.
Yeah, okay, fair. He scored in the Dallas game, and that was a great goal.
Yes.
He has one goal in his last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 games. Now, that's fine. I want to also see more shots. In that Dallas game that he scored, he had 7 shots in.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. But I also... This is another thing, and I'm sure many Islander fans agree with me. I mean, Matt Barzal needs someone to play with on the top line, and his nature is to hold the puck and let the play develop in front of him. He's not going to be the type of player that's going to hold the puck in the offensive zone, skate around with it for 8 to 10 seconds and then shoot it. That's not what he's doing. He's got a rare skill set where he can break defender's ankles with how many cuts he makes and turns and his edges, where he can let that play develop. So he's always going to be a pass first guy. So again, in simple terms, what should you do? You should get him somebody who can get open and shoot the puck, and then we'll see what happens. Anders Lee is not that kind of guy. Anders Lee is a garbage in front of the net power play kind of player, and that's good. We need that. But I don't think Eberle is that kind of sniper. He is at times, and he is heating up, and so is Beauvillier, and that's good news, because if they stay hot in the second half and in the playoffs, that'll be good. But, you know, I don't think you're going to – I know he was shooting a lot more at the beginning of the season, but I think – you can watch video in the summer every day, but until you're back in that routine of game after game after game, and you fall back on what's natural to you, that's what's natural to Matt Barzal. So I don't know if you're going to get that from him.
But he was on a 35 goal pace at one point this year. I agree completely that he's a pass first guy, and one of the easy ways to do that, like you said, is to get someone who's going to score the passes that he's going to put on platters for you. But at the same time, like, he can take more shots. And the last time he has shot more than 4 times twice in the last 15 games, and he scored in both of those games, and he didn't score in any of the other ones. Mm-hmm. And I understand that he's a pass first guy, and I agree completely that there are ways to help that, you know, could and should have been done, and we can talk all we want about how you know what a different conversation we would have been having right now if Panarin had signed with the right New York team. But it's like, you've seen the goals that Barzal has scored this year. He's a good shooter. We're not talking about some guy who doesn't know where the net is, and so you want him to you know, give the puck to somebody else. We're talking about a guy who can really shoot the puck, and we've had this conversation about Josh Bailey too, and he also can shoot the puck, and has done it more, and it's paid dividends.
Yeah, I get it. At the same time, Ben, it's also up to your line mates to get you the puck in a position where you can shoot, and I haven't really seen Lee or Eberle really, you know, win those puck battles more often than not. I think they've been okay, But I think it's mostly been Matt Barzal doing the heavy lifting, and when that's the case, he's not going to shoot much. He's going to have the puck on his stick, and he's gonna play the possession game for a majority of the game. So I hear what you're saying, and he probably can shoot more, but I don't know if that's his natural inclination, and I think you have to adjust to the strengths of your roster and get him someone that can vary that thing. So
that makes sense, and I'll be interested to see how it progresses, because I know I'm not the only one beating the drum of Matt Barzal shoot more. You hear it from Butch almost every second.
Yeah.
On the broadcast. So I think it'll be interesting to see, like, if he does shoot more, and if he scores more, and if he, is able to score on less shots, even,
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you on that. So moving on to the next game, the Lightning game, it was a pretty bad game. And shout out to Kevin and the guys over at, the Tampa meetup group. They did a phenomenal job. There was a ton of people there. I was there last year. I could not make it this year. I had some work obligations, so I couldn't get over there, but, they really, I think Devin made it to the, from Yes Men. I think he was there. They really represented well, as they usually do. And it's a shame that the Isles put up the stinker that they did. We talk about Matt Barzal shooting more. He did score, but it was a mile offside, so that didn't count. Isles ended up only getting 18 shots in that game. They lose 3-1. The game-winning goal goes to Carter Verhaeghe from the Islanders system. So, of course, he got some NHL revenge and twisted the dagger. But we talk about the third line. Let's keep going. Derek Brassard, the only Islander goal scorer. So again, that third line gets on the board. It wasn't a 5-on-5 goal. It was a power play goal. So is that really a third line goal? But still, he's up to 10 at that point on the season. So all in all, though, I mean, you put up 18 shots. More likely than not, you're not winning the game. And I didn't think that they really were in it at all. I know it was scoreless after the first period, but it was like one of those low effort games. And again, they just beat Dallas. They beat LA. You're not going to win every game. Tampa is the hottest team in the league since I think it's Christmas or Thanksgiving or something. Like they're just, I think it was December 1st maybe was like when they're number one in the league. They're becoming more of what we all thought they were going to be, which is a powerhouse. So, okay, you drop that game in Tampa, fine, but let's not make that the norm,
Yeah, I was, because you said Brassard hit 10 goals. So I went to see Phil Pola's stats for last year to try to see, where Brassard is stacking up, because we can see, with the eye test, which I always value more than stats. Stats are really helpful, but to me, it's all about the eye test. And if you're paying attention, you'll see the right things, to my mind. But I wanted to see Phil Pola's stats. So Phil Pola had 17 goals and 14 assists. He also had a plus 19, which I just find astounding.
Yeah. And on top of that, the guy was a shutdown. He was a shutdown center for us. He was a neutral zone monster for the Isles.
I know he's playing for the worst team in the league by a lot, but guess what his plus minus is right now?
I think it's something crazy like minus 20.
Minus 38.
Oh my God, he's giving Nicoletti a run for his money from a few years ago.
It's really bad. Oh, I'm sorry, Val. It might be time to call it quits.
Yeah, he was going back to Detroit to do that anyway. So I mean, do you have anything to add to the Tampa game? Because I mean, that game was, to me, it was just a stinker, and I don't know. I don't really have much to say about it.
No, I watched the first two periods on my phone in the middle of an a cappella concert or competition that I was involved in, which was fun until we didn't place, but whatever. But I, tried to get the gist of that game, and we were about to go on, and it was, I think Tampa just scored, and I was like, all right, I can't be with this anymore. Then I saw after. But I also got the same vibe. Like, it didn't seem like it was horrible defensively. It seemed like we were bad offensively and played, you know, the best offensive team, the hottest team in the league.
Yeah.
And you're not going to win with one goal.
Yep. No, that's really it. I mean, they ran into a tough team. That's going to happen. And we've talked about it at length. We don't, you know, if you take the Islanders playing their absolute best game and you take the Lightning playing their absolute best game and you put them head to head and you look at the roster of Tampa and you look at the roster of the Islanders, you know what the outcome's going to be.
Yeah.
And I know it's not that simple, but sometimes it is. If the Isles played their best, and they didn't play their best game, they certainly didn't, but they got outclassed and they were on the road and, you know, it's going to happen. I mean, they beat the Lightning twice this season. We got, you know, we played them early a couple of times, but we beat them a couple of times. So it just, you know, again, it's one of those, I kind of turned the page on this one and I looked at the week coming up and I was kind of sweating bullets because I was like, oh God, at Washington and then back to back at home against Philly, and like knowing just how tight the Metro is, I was like, this could be the start of something ugly. Thankfully, as bad as they played against Tampa, boy, did they come out against Washington. I mean, in Washington, and just stepped on their throats, jumped out to a 5-1 lead. Washington crawled back made it 5-3, but I'll shut them down in the third. And man, that was a statement game. That was one that I felt like we needed, and we haven't had one of those identity, hey, take us seriously kind of games in a while. And that was one that I mean, Beauvillier jumped out, gets two goals, you know, in the first 10 minutes of the first period. Taves had one. Leo Komarov, Eberle. I mean, that was a solid performance, and I thought really was needed for a lot of reasons. But you know, you don't know how the Metro is going to shake out. You don't know who your matchups are going to be, and to be able to go into Washington and one of their last memories of playing the Isles this season is them being down 5-1. That's a good thing, and that's the second time we jumped out to a big lead against the Caps. So the Caps aren't as scary as I think they once were. And also, they're kind of having a little bit of a defensive crisis themselves where, you know, Philly blew the doors off of them. The Isles put up 5 on them. Like, they're stumbling a little bit. So it'll be interesting to see what happens and if they right the ship going into the, into the final stretch.
Yeah, and it's funny with the Washington game. I don't know if you realized, I didn't realize until I looked at Twitter, but how when Devontae scored, he just like very intentionally didn't celebrate. I thought that was very funny.
Oh yeah, totally. No, I was waiting when I saw him score. I was like, oh God, what's he gonna do? Please don't do anything.
Yeah, I was just in utter shock the whole game. I just did not believe what I was seeing, and it reminded me a lot of last year. And one of the most striking statistics, and this is where I think stats really come in and add a really nice touch to hockey analytics. When you look at the third period, I could be wrong with this, but I'm pretty sure that Washington had zero high danger chances. In the third period, at home, down 2, with Alex Ovechkin, zero high danger chances.
And truly, Ovechkin chasing 700.
Yeah.
Which could be the distraction that the Metro needs for Washington to come back down to earth, because you know every game that goes by that he doesn't hit 700, you know, that's going to become more and more the story. So
yeah, and the other thing is that you're talking about how the, you know, being down 5-1 to the Islanders, the last thing in Washington's head, you know, as it pertains to the Islanders, it's not impossible that these two teams are going to see each other in the playoffs, not by a long shot. It's totally possible to see Pittsburgh winning the division. It's not a crazy headline. I think Pittsburgh are like 2 or 3 back with a.
Yeah, we'll recap after we finish the game recaps. We'll get into the standings for sure.
It's not impossible for that to happen. It's not impossible for the Islanders to become a wild card team, and it's also not impossible for both teams to make the second round. So when it would be a really interesting playoff series. Also, I don't know if you I don't know if I tweeted this or not, but I realized this, that last year both games, I think just like this year, one was on Long Island, one was in Brooklyn. The Caps won both, and the Islanders won both in Washington. The same happened this year. So the last four games, the last eight games, the away team has won. That could be true back into Doug Waite, but I only kept track of the last 2 years. So that would be a really interesting series, the way that that has worked out. I'm sure it's a different story in the playoffs, but all four games were like really, really good games this year.
It's always been a really close matchup with Washington, even more so now that Trotz, you know, we're basically playing similar systems. I mean, they're different now with Todd Reirden. You know, I think he's kind of let the horses roam free a little bit more than Trotz did, but it's close enough. Yeah. Where that would be a really interesting series. I don't know if I want that, but I think more than anything else, I want to avoid Pittsburgh in the first round this year because of what happened last year. And I don't know how Pittsburgh's doing it, but they're really like, this might be like their last gasp. Like this might be the, you know, they know they don't have many more of these in them. That's, you know, very, very possible. Now,
and don't forget they're getting Gensel back in a few weeks.
But sometimes, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, now they're going to be even better. Like, and Pittsburgh traded for Zucker, you know, so Pittsburgh always finds a way to somehow make their team better. And they did it again, and he had two goals the other night. So
did he really? I didn't see that.
Of course he did. So, you know, he's a good player, and it's just something to watch. Before we get off the Washington game, I think it's good to talk a little bit about goaltending. We talked a lot about it last week. We're going to talk a lot about it, I think, against Nashville when we talk about Nashville. But Greiss did get the start on this one, and he looked pretty good. I mean, he made 26 saves on 29 shots. Not the greatest performance, but not a bad one either. I mean, good enough for the win. Up 5-1, you'd hope that your goaltender can, you know, seal the deal, and he did. Did you have any other thoughts on the Caps game?
No, not really. Really quickly on the playoff thing that we were talking about, say Pittsburgh wins the division and you're going to Washington for game one. What's your slogan? What's your mindset? Just give me in a couple words.
My mindset? What, against how to beat them? Or
I'll give you reference. Mine would be bring it on. That's how I would feel. I would feel confident. I would say
it might be stay out of the box.
Yeah, no, that's also a good one.
I mean, because 5-on-5, I think we're fine. But their power play scares me. And the problem is that how many playoff games are 2-1, 3-2, 1-0, whatever, and it's decided by the power play? And their power play, I know we talk about numbers-wise it being equal, and it's ironic that we've kind of come back full circle to this, but I'm deathly afraid of Carlson, Ovechkin, and Backstrom in the playoffs on the power play against the Islanders.
Now that you say Carlson, there is something more that I have on this game. John Carlson is not good defensively. I know this is like not news to anyone, but that's what brought up this thing that I wrote down that I wanted to ask you, is how difficult do you think it would be for a defensive defenseman to make the All-Star game? Because to my mind, like, John Carlson is going to win the Norris this year, and he probably deserves to as well. Mm-hmm. But he's woeful defensively, like truly does not know what he's doing. He's like a -6 against the Islanders in the two games in Washington.
Yeah, the Norris has evolved. With the game being so much more offensive minded, it's definitely you can't be a -50 and you know, win the Norris, but you can be, you know, but if you're putting up points, you're going to get in. I mean, I have to look at his statistics here, but like the last, you know, I mean, like the days of like Chelios and Lidstrom and all the, like, that's not really a thing anymore. You know, maybe Hedman was a good balance of that, right? Because he won it a couple years ago, didn't he?
So I guess like that sort of was one of the ones that kind of is like a good example.
Yeah.
He was not good in his own zone, and he won a Norris or two.
Mm-hmm. I think if you're like really, you either have to be like an offensive phenom, but you can't be, because like look at Letang. Like you'd think Letang, that would be, you know, he'd be somebody that would win the Norris. But I don't know if he's like, I think you have to still have some balance there. But like,
yeah.
Pure defensive defensemen, I don't think they're flashy enough to get the attention from the hockey beat writers. I really don't. I don't know. I don't know. You'd have to be pretty amazing to do that.
Adam Pellick could be a plus 40 like halfway through the year and he wouldn't make an all-star game.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it doesn't, that's, so speaking of defensemen with potential Norris upside, down the road. Let's move on to the Philly game, shall we?
Sure.
So, following night, Isles back home against the Flyers. Flyers nipping at their heels, 1 point back of the Isles. This was a game. So, let me take you through my household. I'm dating a Flyers fan. We put the game on, and immediately, you know, the Isles are up 3-0. Jules is pissed, and I looked at her and I said, haven't you been through enough of these Islander Flyer games to know that this game is not only far from over, but the fact that we're up 3-0 so early almost guarantees that you'll tie this game up? And she looks at me like, yeah, whatever. Sure enough, I'll jump up 3-0, and Philly claws their way back, and late in the third period, Couturier ties the game, and you just kind of sitting there saying you knew that this was going to happen because the Isles did it to the Flyers earlier in the season.
Yeah.
They were getting killed, and they came back and ended up beating them. So I honestly thought when Philly tied it that we were probably going to lose in OT because we had no momentum.
I honestly, this might be the craziest thing, and you have – I said this over the text in the group chat. You have every right not to believe me. When they scored the goal, I was obviously pissed off because like they scored a goal with a minute and a half to go. I was like, a little part of me was like, I feel like they scored too early. I feel like we're going to win this in regulation. I don't know what it was. I had a feeling. I don't know how to explain it. I don't know if – how I would have, you know, reacted if it hadn't. I wasn't sure or anything, but I had a feeling, and I saw, I think Barzal dumped it in. That's how the play started, I believe. It was either Barzal or Eberle dumped it in, and then they won the puck back, and I was like, okay, we're scoring.
Eberle got it. Eberle, so we're, of course, talking about immediately after the Flyers tie the game, maybe, for me, probably my favorite goal of the year so far.
Oh, yeah.
A Ryan Pulock. Calling it a hard shot or even a howitzer is doing it a disservice. This thing was a freaking laser-guided missile into the top corner. I mean, he just blows it by Brian Elliott. And I mean, not even close. And, Eberle gets it down low, gets it to Lee. Lee gives it to Barzal. Barzal circles the net, does his thing. Ryan Pulock is way too open, gets it right on his tape, and just freaking lets that thing go. And that was it. And bigger than the fact that they didn't blow the game was that they beat them in regulation. And with the Flyers being as close as they are to the Isles, denying them a point was huge.
Huge. And also I'd say – talking about, you know, it was your favorite goal of the season. It was mine too. And I was talking to a friend of mine who's not a hockey fan. And I wanted to test a theory because to my mind, when you think of the best goal of the season. You're going to think of, you know, through the legs after – through the legs top shelf after getting, you know, stick handling past the whole team. That's a new – that's a different type of goal of the season. Because you can't compare the kind of goals that Kucherov and McDavid score to that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Because
Pulak can't do that, and no one – and five people in the league can do what Pulak did. And five people in the league can score the type of goals that Kucherov does. They're just different types of outstanding goals. And I would love to see it why am I blanking on what the word is called? I would love to see what's it called? Odometer. Not odometer. That's for
speedometer.
Speedometer. Wow, I'm such an idiot for that shot.
Yeah, you want the radar. You want the radar gun.
Yeah, the radar gun. I'm such an idiot. I'm so tired.
He got all of that. I mean, that was probably 100 plus. I mean,
exactly.
He's got such a good shot. He should have 20 goals, but he doesn't hit the net as much. And that's, you know, look, for speed, you know, when you want that speed, you're going to give up accuracy sometimes. But man, I mean, and then Leo Komarov finished it. Let's talk about Varley real quick. 35 saves on 38 shots. I mean, he had a great game.
I was shocked he didn't start against Nashville.
Yeah, yeah.
I would have given him the nod. And I remember when Grice started, I was like, am I, like, having an episode? Or did Varley not, like, put on a show 2 nights ago?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, again, we talked about it, Ben. I think Trotz is looking to see who's going to pick up and run with it, and I think we might have our answer when we get into the next game. I want to actually – I'm so mad that I missed this in my notes. Going back to Washington for 1 second, I just want to talk – I know they won the game, but I was so livid that they scratched Bellows that game.
I understand it. I agree, and it's difficult. I think that when you're talking about there are so many different ways that you can interpret player development, and I think you can look at it from the perspective of if you're Kiefer, it's hard not to think, well, the whole team kind of had a dud against Tampa, and I was maybe one of those players. I can't vouch for that. I watched it on like a 2-inch screen. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't know. But – and scratching me after that is like what the fuck, bro? But also, you can say, all right, you had your fame. Now we're going to take you out, and we're going to bring you back in. You're going to want it even more. And there is proof to that method of success. That being said, having said all of that nonsense about player development, I think they just did it because they wanted Ross Johnston to drop the gloves with someone. And frankly, it worked. He did.
Yeah, no, I get it. And I understand that you want to have, like, the beefier lineup against Washington. I get that. But so Bellows scores twice against the Kings, led the team in hits against the Lightning. He had 5 hits against the Lightning. And then, you know, I know it was only one game that they took him out, but, like, the kid's doing what he – like, he's working hard here. How do you – not reward that? Like, how do you make him sit? I just don't get it. And I know you can all scream at me for saying they won the game, idiot. I get that. But aren't they trying to promote a culture of accountability? And if you're going to get called up, do the right things. Like, it just irked me. It was like, come on. Like, he's doing everything he needs to do. How do you sit him? But anyway, they won the game. Fine, whatever. But just wanted to. I would be remiss if I didn't mention that because I was annoyed.
Not to, let's get your fresh reaction because I don't know if you saw this, but earlier today, Arthur Staple tweeted that both Kiefer Bellows and Cole Barger were going to be scratches tonight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, tonight being the Vegas game.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, whatever. You know, at this point, like, I mean, I think we know the type of players. I remember when we got Trotz and I was on cloud 9, the only negative thing I kept reading from Caps fans on forums was like, hey, you guys just got a hell of a coach. Congratulations. We're idiots for letting him go. I can't believe this is happening. But I hope you don't have a lot of young kids that you want to break in the lineup because he will bury them. And I kept seeing that. And, you know, so far, that's kind of been true. I mean, yeah, they might be in the lineup, but even when they're in the lineup, they're playing 7-8 minutes. Like, well, you know, I think we know that's the type of coach Barry is. And we also don't know, you know, they may want Bellows to get more time in the press box, watch the systems, work on some things. So it is what it is. Last thing, going back to the Flyers game real quick, early on, a devastating injury for the Isles. Casey Cizikas gets a freak skate injury, just like Clutterbuck, out 3 to 4 weeks, which is why Cole Bardreau is up now and obviously, you know, taking his spot. Kind of, look, as long as it's not terrible and it doesn't hurt the Isles that bad, it's not bad to have a fully rested Cal Clutterbuck and Casey Cizikas for the final stretch in the playoffs. That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, that makes sense. I just hope that they are 100% for the playoffs. Do we even have a timetable for Clutterbuck's return?
No, not that I saw. I think he'll be – it's not season ending. I mean, he'll be back, but it depends on how it heals. I mean, when you're talking about cut tendons and your wrist like that, I mean, it just depends on, you know, how your muscles are healing, how you're feeling. I mean, so it's – I think when he's ready, they'll say that he's ready and he'll be good to go. So
yeah, it occurred to me recently because I didn't even – realize originally where it cut him, and like, not to be like overly frank and graphic, but like, that's one of the, you know, areas that can, of the body, that if cut can be lethal. And so it really didn't occur to me at first, and it truly is scary shit. And while we're on this, can we
take Cassian, please,
the Cassian?
Yes. Okay, insane. Insane. So we've seen how devastating these skate injuries are. And this moron, who on the Canucks did he kick? Lightning. Was it Chernak?
I think it was Chernak.
Kicks him in the chest with his skate. Total scumbag maneuver. The guy's been – Matt Tkachuk has messed him up in the head now. Like, I know he beat the tar out of Tkachuk in the fight, but, like, that, like, unlocked something in Cassian's brain, and he's just gone complete caveman now. I think he got 7 games for it.
Yeah, he got 7 games.
And not enough.
Yeah, agreed, not enough. And I think that they did the math that it's going to cost him, like, a little over $100,000 in salary. And to me, I wanted to get your take on this. I don't know if you saw my tweet, but to my mind, I just want to read it quickly. So I said, unpopular opinion, this is not that much different to Miles Garrett's helmet fiasco. Using equipment as a deliberate weapon is disgusting and truly dangerous, especially if we've seen what skate lacerations can do. He should be suspended for the rest of the season. When you use something that's been given to you as an asset to play a sport that is also a weapon in a different form, which is as a weapon, and you're trying to hurt someone, that just doesn't have a place in the game. And when I know that this is going to sound really over the top, and you can disagree with me all you want, but to my mind, Zach Cassian, obviously you can't know what's going through his head. You know, there's all the bullshit about, you know, your head's in the game. To my mind, whether it was on purpose or not, this is an action that in situations could kill someone. I'm not trying to say that Zach Cassian was trying to kill Chernak, and I'm not saying that Miles Garrett was trying to kill Mason Rudolph, but both of them did actions that in other situations could have been life-threatening. And we saw that with what happened accidentally to Clutterbuck, with what happened just, I think, yesterday with Jay Bomeister. Completely different situation.
Horrible.
And for someone to do that on purpose, I honestly don't think that that he has a place in the league. I don't think Myles Garrett should have been instated, and I'm finding a hard time like picturing Cassian in the league again. I honestly take that much offense to it.
I mean, I don't think that's like a lifetime bannable offense, but like that's a 20 gamer to me. That's 20 games. Like you have to. And I want to read something from Ken Campbell. He tweeted this, and Ken Campbell with the Hockey News. He's kind of a. Sometimes I think he's spot on. Other times I think he couldn't be further from the truth. And like he's hit or miss. But he had a pretty interesting tweet. He said 7 games for kicking with your skates, and a fine for cross-checking a guy in the throat. George, quote unquote, the violent gentleman Paros, continues to do a quote unquote bang up job. So George Paros, of course, is the head of player safety and also runs the Violent Gentleman clothing line. I don't know. I mean, I think 20 would have been, you cannot let that be something that is even remotely acceptable in the game. And, you know, that's crazy to me.
Look at the call that Evander Kane made.
I'm sorry?
Did you see the call out that Evander Kane made?
No, I didn't.
So he basically tweeted something along the lines of just basically calling out the injustice in player punishment and like the lack of punishment that people get and the punishment that people get that don't deserve, that it goes both ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was not a coincidence that it was in the wake of the Bomeister thing, because there was a really, really good point being made, to my mind, is a really good point, where for the league to be so outstanding at in the ways that they were to help Bomeister, having all of the medics ready as they were, and every single precaution, every action that needed to be taken was executed to perfection to save his life, really, and maybe his career as well. But most importantly, his life, and also to have such a gaping hole in the way that they treat issues that happen like on purpose.
Well, that's it. Yeah, you nailed it. It's the intentional stuff. I get like it. Hockey is such a fast game. I get, you know, a hit to the head when a guy's turning and, you know, things happen so fast and you stick out your elbow because you're trying to turn your body and you hit him. Like, a lot of times things look a lot worse than, like, what the intention was. That's cut and dried. There can't be any doubt that that is not a minimum, you know, quarter season suspension for something that's that egregious. And that obvious. I don't care if he's a repeat offender or not. You attack someone with a blade. You have a blade on your foot. You can't be. And if you're that stupid, or you can't control your emotions, then yeah, maybe you need to get yourself sorted out. And 20 games would do you well for that. So I'm with you, man. Like the intentional stuff. It needs to be – there needs to be like a – just like there's a match penalty in a game, there needs to be something that they categorize these things as like being egregious or being outside of the purview of repeatable offense, that sort of thing. It just needs to be a black and white, like, no, this is something that we deem as an intentional whatever you want to call it. And it's going to be something that should be negotiated in the next CBA, because – I know they can't do it now because of the way that the CBA is written, and that's stupid. You're not protecting your own players with the Players Association. So,
and it's kind of almost funny, but it's the same issue as it is with goaltender interference. We just need to know what it is.
Yeah, well, goaltender interference is a little trickier because
I understand, but it's like the solutions are different, but the problem is to me similar, where you need to figure out what it is so that you can address, you know, the situations as they come, and it's not like everything is a toss up where, you know, Chara gets a 1-game suspension and it's probably just not more because, you know, people know his name.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. I'd say all in all that stuff is pretty ugly. And, speaking of ugly, Al's Preds. So if you're feeling good about yourself and about the team, winning a back-to-back against Metro opponents, tough Metro opponents, feeling pretty good.
Get ready to get shit on.
Isles roll up into Nashville. And boy, oh boy. I don't even think – so I'm going to throw the third period out because by then the game was over. I don't think the Isles played a bad game at all. I think this game 100% was on Thomas Greiss. And the very first goal that he let in, I said, he doesn't have it tonight. Pull him. You know with him. If you've been watching him every year, you know when he doesn't have it. And that first goal should have never gone in. And you got to know he doesn't have it. And by the time he gets pulled, it's 3-0. He couldn't stop anything. One of the shots, he freaking moved away from the puck. Oh, just was off. And something is not right with this guy. He looks like he did 2 years ago. Doesn't look like what he did last year. And I don't think you can rely on him at this point to be anything more than a backup.
Well, that's the exact reason why he hasn't been able to establish himself as a starter, is he can get hot. And he can even be a 1A at times. We saw it this season. He can't be relied on, and that's the main issue. And I think with Greiss, it's difficult because he's also in a contract year. But when you're talking about that goal, the first goal, you know he's off. Those are the kind of things where the day that someone pulls a goaltender because you know he's not right after the first goal goes in will be a revolutionary day.
I think Keenan used to do that.
Really?
I think Mike Keenan used to do that. I'm pretty sure if he saw somebody let in a bad goal at the beginning of the game, I have to look this up, but like I'm fairly certain. I mean, Greiss let in 3 goals on 8 shots and his night was over. And the Isles night was over at that point. They were outworking Nashville, especially that first period. They'd be down. They would be down in the zone. They'd be working the puck. Saros played great.
They'd be grinding.
They'd be aggressive. And Nashville would just come down, shoot the puck, and score. Like, you can't have that.
Yeah. It really is difficult because – those are the kind of like things that really deflate you as a team. We talked about how I think a lot of the reason why Leonard got some of the plaudits rather than Greiss was some of the times where Leonard stood up, he picked up the team. It was literally like from the goalie out, the way Arizona's been all year, where they have, you know, 5 Farmers skating in front of Kemper and they're in a playoff spot. And with Leonard, that was confidence. That was confidence booster. When you played with – you guys said it last week with Greiss versus Harlamov, you were actually pro-Greiss in the situation, where you were saying Greiss inspired confidence in the Islanders to play better with, because they were confident in the goalie behind him and they weren't with Varlamov. Greiss is not instilling a lot of confidence on the Islanders right now, and that's the issue, is that it looks like either both instill confidence or neither do. It's like,
yeah,
it's like what goaltending you're gonna get right now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And so check this out. I was right, Iron Mike. I pulled up an article from 2013 when he was coaching in the KHL, and he made 2 goalie changes in 3 minutes. So he pulled his goalie when they were down 2-0 in the first 14 minutes or the first 10 minutes of the period. 14 minutes into the opening period, his team's down 2-0. He pulls the goalie. 3 minutes later, they get scored on, and he pulls the backup goalie, puts the starter back in.
And that, my friends, is how Ilya Sorokin's career began.
I mean, it's just so good. Like that's like, I could see Torts doing that. And I know most, like, I know, like, two goals, like, two weak ones would be me. Like, if I see 2 bad ones, I'm like, all right, you're done. So, you know, it's just, but yeah, to get back to it, like, I don't know what, I mean, you got to ride Varley now. You got to play Varley 2-3 out of 4 games now.
Well, what if Varley puts the same thing up tonight? I mean,
well then you know what? You can all look to Lou, because Lou let a Vezina goalie walk away.
What if you can trade it? We can bring him right back.
He just got a Long Island tattoo on his neck. Did you see that?
Oh, that's, I love him so much.
Guy gets Long Island tattooed on his neck. By the way, tell me you don't bring him back next year. Are you kidding me?
I really, really hope this doesn't lose us any viewers, or not viewers, listeners. I don't think there's something in the world that I despise more than neck tattoos. I'm sorry. It's not anything against the people that have them. They just rub me the wrong way. But that's not like bad. My favorite.
If you have long hair, you can kind of hide it.
Yeah,
if you have
exactly. Short hair, that's the only excuse.
I mean, and this is for me. I mean, I've got my entire bottom right leg is tatted up, and I've got a half sleeve on my arm. Kenny's got a sleeve, like, so. Oh, look, I'm all about the ink, but like.
Yeah. No, I'm fine.
Yeah, like the neck. Yeah.
Necks are not, I mean, my so, thing, not my thing.
I mean, this dude. It kills me. It kills me that Robin Leonard loves the team as much, loves Long Island, loves the team as much as he does. Like, at some point, and it's not even like, oh, well, you know, make him the backup and have, like, God, he could be, I don't even know what this team could have with Leonard. So, it's kind of a bummer, because I don't think they played bad, but they got absolutely blown away 5-0. And now what was a very, like, I thought the Isles were really getting back on track. But, like, in between these two, you know, these two little pockets of wins, they laid an egg in both. So, again, it's like, all right. Looking at the standings now, and this is – so it's, we're recording this before the Vegas game, so it's February 15th. Right now, Washington's up top with 79 points. The Penguins are behind them with 76 points with one less game played. And the Isles are in third with 72 points. So we're 4 points back of the Penguins. We're 7 points back of the Caps. We've got the same amount of games played as the Penguins. In the wild card spot, CBJ has played 3 more games than us, and they're 1 point behind. So they're going to fade a little bit. The Flyers have the same amount of points and the same games played. So the Flyers have played 3 more games than us also, and they're 1 point back. So that's good. If we could win some of these games and get some distance, we could end up having 3, 4, 5 points, ahead. Outside right now is Carolina. They've got 69 points with 1 more game played than us. So they're 3 points back with 1 game played. So, and then Florida's starting to fade. Florida's played 58 games and they've got 66 points. Right behind them is the Rangers. The Rangers are about to pass the Panthers. So you're literally, besides the Devils, every other team in the East is from the Metro that's up top like that, besides the 3 playoff teams, Boston, Tampa, and Toronto, who's kind of figured it out. So it's coming down to the wire. I mean, these games are so important, and yeah, that's why we were joking early on about, like, does 100 points even get you in? I mean, the way that these teams are winning, who the hell knows? This is insanity. Exactly.
That's sort of how I wanted to come full circle is – We're talking about, you know, the Islanders and how they're going to do and what do they need to hit 100 points. And they're probably going to eclipse last year's 103 points, which even Islanders fans, we would have not laughed, but we definitely wouldn't have said that. I think in our predictions, we had like 93, 97, 99 or something.
Yeah, I think we were somewhere in like the upper – we didn't think they would hit 100.
Yeah, and – I would be shocked if they didn't hit 100 at this point.
You think? And I think there's a chance they don't. I mean, they have
500. They have to go 500 to hit 100 points.
Well, I mean, that's kind of been what they've been lately.
Okay, no? But they're not going to be worse than 500. Do you think they're going to be worse?
They don't have Casey Cizikas, they don't have Pelech, and they have a little bit of a goalie crisis. I don't think it's a guarantee. Is it likely? Probably not. But I don't think it's a given that they won't. I mean, they've got to figure something out, because they've lost 2 very important pieces, and they've got question marks in net.
That's fair. I would still go to say that also, I don't think anyone would be surprised, you know, with where they are now, if they eclipsed last season's 103, which is only like 2 wins more than 100 points.
They've got 26 games left, right? 26 yeah. games left, and they've got 72 points. So out of 26 games, they need to get 28 points to hit 100.
Yeah, so win if you win 15 and get an overtime loss, that's tying last year's points.
What is it? They have, how many points are on the table? 52?
Yeah.
So you got 52 points on the table because they got 26 games left. So 52, and they've got to get 28.
28 so, for 100, 31 to pass last year's points total.
Right. 31. So they got to get 31 out of a possible 52.
Oh, I wait. Mean, if they want to tie, 32 to pass.
32 to pass. Okay. So with 26 games left, if they win, so they got to win. If they win two out of, say they get four out of 6 points. Right. Every 3 games. I mean, you got 26. Let's see. Yeah, they could do it.
I know.
If they win two out of 3 games, they'd have what I think 34 points.
That's 107 points.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they'll do that, but look, it's gonna be close. It's gonna be close.
Now you're talking about an Islanders that have had higher expectations, like we talked about last week. Higher expectations, question marks in net, as you said, their best defensive defenseman out for half the year. And probably for the playoffs as well, right?
Yeah. They haven't said playoffs, but probably.
Yeah. I think you'd be back in like the second round if we're lucky or some shit like that. They played without Clutterbuck for a lot of the year. Injuries that I would say are comfortably worse than last year, unless I'm forgetting something, right? We were lucky with injuries reasonably last year.
Yeah, we got lucky.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not even looking at that. I'm just looking at their schedule. I mean, the rest of March, they got Vegas tonight, Arizona, Colorado, Detroit. They could win at least 2 out of 4 of these next 4 games, maybe 3 out of 4, or at least get 6 out of 8 points, right? That would be great. Then it gets a little rougher. They've got San Jose and the Rangers, the Blues, and then Boston. And then to start March, they've got Montreal, Ottawa, Carolina, Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, Pittsburgh, Calgary, Toronto. I mean, they've got a tough run coming up here. So it's not going to be easy. It's certainly doable. But let's see. I mean, I think you got to try to shoot for 100 points because I don't know if you're going to make it if you don't get 100 points.
Yeah, that's the big issue. But for this Islanders team to have a comparable points total to last year with – question marks in net, all the things that I said before, and a huge, huge, huge drop off a cliff at third line center. That's really
and fourth line center if you're talking just numbers.
Yeah, and exactly. That's really, really good.
Imagine if they actually made adjustments to this roster. What a concept!
Exactly, and. It's not impossible to eclipse, you know, imagine 104 points. You see the Caps in the playoffs or the Penguins in the playoffs, or I would love to see the Flyers in the playoffs. I know you wouldn't for other personal reasons.
God, that'd be the worst thing in the world.
Has that happened to you?
No. So we've been dating for, this is our third year. This is going to be our third playoffs together. So the first year we were dating, the Flyers played the Penguins in the first round and the Islanders didn't. That was a Doug Weight year.
Did you root for the Flyers?
Yeah. I hate the Penguins. I hate the Penguins. So I was rooting for the Flyers. Flyers got out. They did not look great that series. They lost, I think, in 6. And then obviously last year we played the Penguins and you know what happened there. So
was she rooting for you?
Oh yeah. She's good like that. She'll wear an Islander hoodie when we go to like Islander games and stuff and like so you know that's.
What about you, on air?
I have not worn anything yet, but for Christmas, her mom thought it'd be funny to get me a Flyers T-shirt, which I have not worn yet, not even in my house, nothing. I have not worn it yet. However, if we end up going to a Flyers game, I will support her because she supported me. Doesn't mean that that's where my heart lies, but especially if it's in Florida, because I hate the Panthers fans so much, I'll be more than happy to wear rival colors in that building. So that's, you know.
Yeah, no, I would be with you too. I have worn a Bruins jersey before.
Well, I mean, that's, you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah. Also, if I had to pick a favorite Bruin, it would be Torey Krug, who the jersey is of.
You got to go Charlie McAvoy. He's from Long Island, man. Come on.
Agreed, but I got this jersey before Charlie McAvoy was drafted.
All right, fine. All right, so let me ask you a question here, because we're running a little long. I want to start to wrap up here. We are 9 days away from the second trade deadline with Lou Lamoriello behind the Isles desk. Do we make any moves?
Fuck, dude. I knew you were going here, and I don't know. Do you think we're making any moves? I know you're going to say
no. You know the answer. Answer for me. You know my answer.
Well, yeah, you're saying no. And absolutely. I'm saying, here's the thing. I would have said no, but I think – or I've had flip-flops on this, and it was, weirdly enough, had nothing to do with the forward group. I don't think we need another defenseman, but I think Lou did. And I think that now that – I believe that tonight Hickey – I don't know if he did end up playing, but he was scheduled to play for Bridgeport tonight. So if that ended up happening, I think that – that defensive issue was sort of sorted because he can bring up Hickey and send down Aho, which I think will happen in the near future. So my thoughts were, okay, when Pellet got injured, okay, maybe we're going to bring in like a Pajot and Hainsey or some shit. And then when Hickey started to be more on the mend, I was thinking, all right, if he's thinking that's the seventh D that we needed, then you're fine. So I would say no, but the one issue that I'm thinking is there are so many options available, not in terms of players that would like help us, but in terms of dud salaries that we can take on that are expiring for the kind of teams that are at or near the cap, like a Vegas or a Toronto. We can take on a shit contract because we have tons of room this year. Tons.
Yeah, they could take on a bad contract this year, but
yeah, as long as it's expiring. If someone needed had an LTIR to LTIR space full and wanted to bring someone in, like if Toronto wanted to bring in maybe Toronto wanted to bring in Kreider, how did Toronto get rid of that space? They can give like Cody Ceci to the Islanders. I don't know what CeCe's contract looks like.
You don't want Cody. I wouldn't want Cody.
I wouldn't want him either, but he doesn't have to play.
Here's the worst. You know the worst part about this is the names that are on like the trade deadline target list are all names that I would want to have. That and they're rivals. They're playing for our rivals. You got Kreider. You've got Georgiev, you've got Palmieri, you've got Vatanen. Like, these are Devils and Ranger players. Like, you're not going to get them.
By the way, for context, continue.
No, I'm just saying, like, that's like what, you know, those are the guys that, I mean, yep. Yeah, I mean, Tyler Toffoli's out there, J.G. Pageau's out there. Alec Martinez is out there. Brendan Dillon's out there. Kovalchuk's out there. But that's like, those are like the names. Like, there's, you know, you're talking about, you know, UFAs. I still would like to see, I don't want to just see us limited to that. Like, you can go after a guy that's not a UFA until the end of next year if you want. Like, I mean, what are we doing here? We're just the same.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. Like, I'm going to keep talking about this until something happens. So I think I'm going to be talking about this for a really long time.
Yeah. By the way, for context, Thomas Hickey did not play tonight for the Sound Tigers. It was more of like an optimism that he might. That being said, a certain Islander prospect has 2 goals for them tonight. Would you like to guess who it is?
Simon Holmstrom.
Yes, it was. Good job. Mm-hmm. Also, Wallstrom has a goal. So, nice. Up 3-2 on two from Holmstrom and a third from and one from Wallstrom.
That kid Holmstrom's going to end up being a player.
Yeah, I think so too. If he can stay off the medics table.
Yeah. And anybody who leaves home behind and just is like, no, I want to start playing in the system now. That's huge to me. So I'm pumped for him. I think Wallstrom is heating up. I think, look, I get it. We've got great prospects. You don't want to let them go, and that's fine. We still have a number one pick that it's going to be a middle to late first round pick more than likely. Move that for someone. Don't move the prospects. Also, speaking of prospects, they did assign Bodie Wild back to junior, Saginaw Spirit. More than likely a roster move. And I think this whole year was a setback with that high ankle sprain. So I mean, he only started playing a couple of months ago, I think. So I think it's good to get him back to junior, and then he's going to be a little bit of a longer term project.
Yeah. Also hoping that that was one of the indications that we were looking to do something, because that freed up a roster spot, because we were on 49 contracts and now we're on 48.
You poor, poor child. You really think that something's going to happen with Lamoriello?
No, I really don't. But here's what I was thinking is I thought that the only chance something was going to happen was if we brought on, you know, the kind of deal that would bring in Pageau and Hainsey.
That makes sense.
And never play Hainsey. But you could only do that, especially if we were only going to give up picks and prospects, if we freed up a roster spot.
Right. Right.
So I was just, I wasn't saying I was expecting or even optimistic. It's just a freeing up a roster spot could be perceived as for someone to fill it. Wild concept.
Maybe. Until I see something happen, it's just, you can't expect. He's holding on to everybody, which is fine. But if they squeak in the wild card, or they go out in the first round with a whimper, that's like, to me, that's a major, that's 2 years of major failings that, you know, you've got all these guys on cheap. I mean, I'm going to repeat myself from other episodes, but you've got all these guys on cheap contracts now that you won't have next year. You had 2 years to maximize that window and you did nothing.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's a problem. You've got 9 days to do something now, you know, and then we're back in the same boat where it's like, oh, maybe over the summer, maybe, like, and I know Kenny, if he was here, you have to represent him. He would say, what are you going to do? Who are you going to add that's going to really make a big difference? But, you know, you got to do something. Something. So,
I don't know what you're like for time. There were three quick things that I wanted to get to before.
Yeah, if they're really quick, then we can do them. If not, then we can maybe hold them till next week.
Okay. So I'm going to hold one of them till next week.
Okay.
Because it's longer. And also I'll get Kenny's point of view on it just for a quick teaser. It's about Devon Toews. The two quick ones are, one, we know that Bellows, whether he came in to improve the team or for trade value, increased his trade value over four games because he scored twice and had an assist.
Yeah, most likely, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you think that Bellows coming up possibly increased Michael Del Col's trade value?
Maybe. I mean, he's looked better for sure.
And I don't think it's a coincidence that Bellows involved in that.
I think Del Col has been looking better steadily throughout the course of the season. And I think, yeah, maybe having somebody that he's comfortable with, familiar with, I think that helps too. He's looked a lot more aggressive.
I forgot they played together last year.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was stupid. Anyway.
No, that's okay. I mean, it's just, you know, but – I mean, I don't know how much time they spent. I mean, Dal Col, I think, was on the first line because he was leading the team in goals, and I don't think Bellows was on the first line. So I don't know how much, you know, they actually played together, but there's familiarity there. So I think, you know, I think Dal Col's definitely helped improve his value. I still don't know if that's much of anything, if we're honest with you.
Especially because at this point we're 9 days away, and it's looking less and less likely.
Yeah.
Anyway, second thing. We talked a couple months ago when those sick fisherman shit hats came out.
Yes.
About how they were paving the way to possibly introduce the fisherman as an alternate.
Mm-hmm. And
just sort of like see what fans, how they would go down. And we were both in the same boat, I think, that if I remember correctly, that it's a good business model to bring back the fishermen, because the people who don't like the fishermen are not going to stop liking the Islanders. And the people who do like the fishermen are going to buy jerseys, which is good for the Islanders. And so there's like no reason not to bring it back as an alternate. But do you think that the lack of any rumblings recently might indicate no fisherman alternate? Or do you think that it's because that happened, they were, sold out, or I think one of them was sold out in a couple days from the store at Northwell Health Eye Center within a couple days? Mean like, okay, they got the consensus they wanted, they're going to introduce it, in the summer or at the beginning of next season.
Well, did you see the picture that the team store tweeted out like two weeks ago? They're selling fisherman jerseys with the current players on them.
Wait, really?
Oh yeah, I sent you the picture. It was a teaser, and it was Anthony Beauvillier, and it had his number with the fisherman wavy numbers and his name. You knew it was him. It was 18, and it said, you saw the EAUVILL, and that was it. And they had like a fisherman hat on each side of it, and it was clearly the fisherman jersey. So they're definitely selling
current
roster players on the fish sticks jersey now.
See, that is the issue, is you sent me that jersey and I didn't look who tweeted it. I just assumed it was some fan who got it customized.
No, man, that was the team store.
Okay, sick. Okay, then like take back everything I said, and at this point I'm hearing this could just be a raw emotion, but like I'm maybe optimistic that we might get that next year.
It's possible.
I don't think
it's good. They're going to sell no matter what. They're going to sell, especially if you're only wearing them two or three nights a year.
Yeah.
Everybody's doing 90s nights. So, I mean, it's definitely going to happen.
Quick side note. Did you see the Kings jersey for the stadium series tonight? I'm in love. I think they're absolutely.
I saw it. I thought it was awful.
Really?
I thought both of those uniforms were so bad. I love what they're doing with the helmets. Like the Flyers and Penguins did it. Now the Avalanche and Kings are doing it where, like, they've got, like, their logo on the helmet, like football kind of. I think that's cool, and I think that teams should start getting a little bit more leeway into what they can do with the team helmets.
Yeah.
But the jerseys, like, they look like bad rec league roller hockey team jerseys.
Really? I think they're sick. I don't like them. I would never wear them in a regular game, but, I would think they're sick. Also, I saw my friend who's like a casual Bruins fan at lunch a couple days ago wearing a, not like a jersey, but a cotton t-shirt of like a tie-dye Mighty Ducks shirt. And I thought it was sick.
Well, Mighty Ducks is coming back on Disney Plus.
Oh, really? That's sick.
They're making a TV show. And Emilio Estevez is coming back as Coach Gordon Bombay.
Oh, wait, you told me that. That's sick. Yeah.
Yep.
I saw it was like a purple tie-dye with the Mighty Ducks logo, and I thought it was sick on just like a casual. I don't even know if he knew that the Ducks have the rights to that logo. I can't believe that's not an alternate jersey in the league.
Which one? Are you talking about like the original District 5 green and purple ones that they wore in Mighty Ducks 1? Or are you talking about like the purple, like.
No, the ones that the Ducks have worn in the past.
They kind of wear those in like a third jersey, like. They've done that before. They've worn those purple ones before.
I think they're sick. Like, again, same thing with the fishermen. I would hate it if it was, like, the jersey. But as an alternate, it's sick.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, you gotta have some fun. We've talked about that. I like the Isles third jerseys now, but they're very safe. Like, I would have liked that uniform layout with the orange being the primary color. I think that would have been much better.
Oh, that would have been cool. I'm usually not a huge orange primary color as the primary.
Well, when those jerseys first came out, the actual template had leaked. But what the original thought was that it was going to be an orange jersey with the NY logo. And instead of the white shoulders, those shoulders were blue.
See, as an alternate, that would be sick.
Yeah, that would be cool. I mean, I thought that was, yeah, that was kind of the direction they were going. But I think maybe they felt like it was like too much like the Oilers.
Yeah, okay, I understand. So, but it's an alternate jersey. Like, have some fun. Take risks.
I know. But that's it.
So. You're not allowed to have fun in the league.
Yeah.
You don't want to get back into your stupid impressions.
No, not this week. We'll save that for the off season because we can have some fun with that if anybody is even listening or cares at that point, which might be better off. But
at the deadline on July 1st, you know, you're getting interviews from all the UFAs.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we got a big game in about an hour for you late night crowd. I'm about to get my coffee brewed and. Get ready for some Isles hockey in Vegas.
I'm going to take an hour power nap. I don't know about you.
No, I don't know. Mm-mm. No, I'll probably throw my PlayStation, play some more Horizon Zero Dawn, and then get ready for the Isles.
Yeah. So, I wish I didn't have to be up at 10 a.m. tomorrow. Stupid SAT class.
Nice. Fun stuff. All right. Well, we'll have like a day or two left with the trade deadline by the time we get to the next episode. So maybe something will happen. I'm holding my breath. I can't wait to see what crazy move we pull off in the 11th hour. It's going to just be awesome. Yeah.
Wait, Damon. Totally. Damon, are you being sarcastic?
What? No, me? Never. What?
how?
All right. If you stuck with us this long, you're a hero, a scholar, a trooper. Thank you. Thank you for listening. As always, you can find us on Anchor FM. You can find us on Spotify. You can find us on SoundCloud. You can find us on iTunes. Twitter at @LISound_ is my friend Ben. I am at KaijuBlue13. Check us out on Facebook. That's where I post the episodes also. We've got a fun little group there. So definitely make sure that you hit that. And if you're a part of one of the Islander major groups, I usually post the episodes in there too. So, you know, let us know how you heard us and how you found us and all that good stuff. For Ben, I'm Damon. Thanks for listening. Let's go Isles. Big game tonight against Vegas, and we'll see you guys later.
Damon, do you think we're going to win?